Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. I said this morning that this is perhaps the most important passage in the Old Testament. I don't think that there's a passage in the Old Testament that is more of a key to understanding the Bible than Genesis chapter 12. In verses 1 through 3, "Now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Now there are seven specific promises there in Genesis 12, 1 through 3. But there are two great overriding promises that actually outline not only the rest of the Old Testament, but tied the Old Testament to the New Testament. The first is the first of the promises that God made to Abraham. At this point, his name is still Abram. You know, of course, that his name was changed to Abraham, as is recorded in Genesis chapter 17. But the first promise here is, "I will make you a great nation." So there's the nation promise, the first of the three great promises that God made to Abram. And then in verse 3, "In you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." We'll call that the spiritual promise. In Genesis chapter 22, we'll see this later, it takes the form of what we would call the seed promise. "In your seed all nations of the earth shall be blessed." And that's how Paul refers to it in Galatians chapter 3. And so, previewing Genesis 22, verse 18, we will call this the seed promise. Now, continuing in Genesis chapter 12, now, on the basis of what Stephen says concerning Abraham in Acts chapter 7, we know that the call to Abraham to leave his country, his family, his father's house, actually occurred while he was still in the Ur of the Chaldees, and that he left Haran sometime before he was 70, or around the time he was 75 years of age. But if you have a map in the back of your Bible, I haven't reproduced this on a chart for us tonight, but you will see that Ur of the Chaldees is where modern Kuwait is. Abraham, or Abram as his name was called, then left there around the time he was 75 years of age, and he went up to Haran, which is in the northern part of Mesopotamia, which would be in the northern part of Iraq today, in what would be called Kurdistan, or in northern Iraq. And that's where Haran is located. And so he journeyed up there along with his wife Sarai, whose name was changed to Sarah in Genesis chapter 17, along with his nephew Lot, and along with his father Terah. And then from Haran, he turned to the southwest and journeyed across Syria and crossed the Jordan River and came into the land of the Canaanites, or it is later called Canaan, and came to a place that is called Shechem, which is located between Mounts Ebal and Gerizim. Now we're in Genesis chapter 12, verse 7. Genesis 12, verse 7. "Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your descendants I will give this land.' And there Abraham erected an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him, offered a sacrifice to the Lord." So now we have a third of the threefold Abrahamic promises in Genesis 12, verse 7. By the way, let me tell you something. Several years ago, I taught the book of Genesis over in Grenada, Mississippi, when I was preaching there. And I asked the congregation to memorize Genesis 12, 1 through 3 and 7. And they did so. And every Wednesday evening when we studied the book of Genesis, we would begin our study by quoting together Genesis 12, 1 through 3 and verse 7. Now, I did it in the New King James. You can do it in the translation you're following. But that's how key I consider Genesis 12, 1 through 3 and 7 to be. The three great promises that God made to Abram, whose name was changed to Abraham, his wife's name changed to Sarah. It outlines the entirety of the Old Testament. It ties the Old Testament to the New, and it gives us a framework for understanding not only Old Testament history, but a framework for understanding the development of the divine plan of salvation. Now, you take that along with this morning's lesson where we see the different ways that God has spoken to mankind in different ages and how He speaks to us today. And I hope that will give us an overview in our minds. You know, it always helps when you're trying to remember things to get an overview of that. Then you start putting things in the proper category. That these two lessons together will give us an overview of the great divine plan of salvation that was in the mind of God as a mystery before the world began and has been brought to fruition in His Son, Jesus Christ. Sometimes in the events of history, there is a crucial turning point which determines what will happen in the future. I'm going to give the American Civil War, as folks in the South like to call it, the war between the states, or as some folks call it, the war of Northern aggression. but nonetheless, in the great American Civil War, there was a great turning point that determined how that war would turn out. Before 1863, before the summer of 1863, because of the superiority of the Southern leadership, the generals, particularly, of course, Robert E. Lee, even though the North had overwhelming advantage in personnel, in supplies, in almost every way, but because of the superior generalship in the South, The South was winning the war, and was rather than being on the defensive, had gone to the offensive. So Robert E. Lee led the Army of Northern Virginia, which he was the commander of, into a foray into the North, and the North was in a panic. Washington, D.C. was just in an absolute total panic. As Lee's Army of Northern Virginia made its way into southern Pennsylvania, and the Northern troops trying to move around to shield the capital from them, and just in one of those blind chances, because Lee didn't have his cavalry with him to act as the scouts. Jeb Stuart was off on a foray somewhere, and he didn't have his cavalry with him to let him know where the Northern army was. They just stumbled into each other at a little village known as Gettysburg in southeastern Pennsylvania. And from July the 1st to the 3rd of 1863, they just slugged it out, as armies would do at that time. And the carnage was horrific, just incredibly awful. And on the third day, when Lee had been unable with his troops to break through the northern defenses that were set on the hilltops, looking down on them, making it very, very difficult, he ordered something which it was against his own best judgment. He apparently had believed his own press releases that they were invincible. And so he ordered Pickett's charge, and Brigadier General Pickett took his division head-on into the face of the enemy atop Little Round Top, marching 15,000 men, marching abreast in military dress parade for a complete mile across fields into the teeth of the incredible barrage of cannon fire and rifle fire that just completely decimated Pickett's division. And they actually, in incredible bravery, just unbelievable bravery, managed to reach the northern lines and even breach them for just a brief time. But because they had just been decimated by the fire that they marched through for a mile, they were beaten back, and they had to then withdraw. And when General Pickett returned to General Lee to report to him, and General Lee told him to assemble his division, General Pickett said, "General Lee, I have no division. It had been completely wiped out by the northern fire." And that was it. Lee made a retreat, and his army, had the northern general followed up, could have been completely obliterated at that point. But because of northern inaction, Lee was able to make it back to Virginia and resume again defensive positions. But the point is this: Gettysburg determined how the Civil War would turn out. After that, it's a matter of time. There was just a matter of finally enclosing, and overwhelming the South, because when Gettysburg was lost, the war was lost. It took another 2 years of bloodshed of incredible carnage and bloodletting to end the war, but it was lost at Pickett's Charge in Gettysburg in July the 3rd, 1863. Now, that's how just one event can determine how history, imagine how history would have been changed. Had Pickett breached the Northern lines and they had won and had routed the Northern Army, imagine how history would be different, but it's not. You can't look back and change history. And thus that determined. And this is the place that the promise God made to Abraham has in the divine plan of salvation, the development. This, on this threefold promise, you see the whole plan of salvation developed and worked out by the Lord so that we, through the seed of Abraham, have the hope of eternal life. So how was the promise of Abraham fulfilled and worked out? Well, the first thing I wanted to see is that this promise was conditional. Sometimes people talk about unconditional promises from God. There may be such a creature, but I'm not sure that there is. God's promises are conditional. And that includes the promise He made to Abraham. It was not an unconditional promise. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, before God promised Abraham one thing, He gave him some commands. He said, the Lord appeared to Abraham and told him that he was to, in the Ur of the Chaldees, that he was to leave his country, his family, and his father's house and go to a land that I will show you. Had Abraham not done that, he would have not have received the threefold Abrahamic promise. So there, it's conditional. Now, you talk about conditional. That's the beginning. Now, think about this. Some of you in this audience have lived perhaps your entire life within 20 or 30 miles of where you were born. I have a hard time understanding such a life. I've traveled around so much. But not, I haven't traveled as much as many other people have, though. But imagine the Lord appeared to you when you're an old person. And so you get up and you leave your country. Now, didn't you say leave your county? Leave your country. And you leave your family, and you leave your father's household, and you go, and I'll tell you where you're going when you get there. You just get up and go. Now imagine the Lord doing that to you, and you're not young, you're old. Abraham was 75 years old when he received that command. And he went, as far as we know, asking no questions. But now, that's the easy part of it. Now let's come to the time when Abraham was really old. And finally, at the age of 100, that promised son Isaac had been born. And now Isaac is a young person. And we don't know exactly how old Isaac was or exactly how old Abraham was when this occurred. But all of Abraham's hopes, all of Abraham's love, his life is centered in that young, in that lad, Isaac. He's everything to him. And the Lord now appears to Abraham in the south and he says, "You take your son. Your only son." Now, he wasn't his only son, but he was only son of promise. "You take your son, your only son, Isaac, and you go to the mountain to Moriah." Now, that's where the temple later was built, on Mount Moriah. "And you offer him as a burnt sacrifice." Now, Joe, okay, how would you like to have the Lord appear to you and say, "Take one of your grandchildren and offer him as a burnt sacrifice"? Whoa, that's going too far, isn't it? That's just... But here is all of Abraham's hopes, all his life is wrapped up. Everything he ever hoped for is wrapped up in Isaac. And God says, "You take him and offer him as a burnt sacrifice." And Abraham never argued and never questioned. He didn't delay. He took with him two of his servants, saddled the donkey, put the wood on the donkey, took some fire along with him, and the knife, and he went off to the mountains of Moriah. He came where he could see a long way off, and he told the servants, "You stay here, and the lad and I will go yonder to worship, and we'll return to you." In Abraham's mind, God had raised him from the dead, as we learn in Hebrews chapter 11. And he took that son, Isaac, and he went up to the mountain, to the top of Moriah, and as he was going, and here's a place where I try to put myself in the shoes of the old patriarch, and I cannot do it. It just breaks my heart to think about it. And as he journeyed toward the top of the mount, and Isaac, that beloved son, says, "Father, here's the fire, here's the wood, where's the sacrifice?" And Abraham could have said, "Son, you're it." But he didn't. He said, "Yahweh Yireh, the Lord Himself will provide." And he went up to the top of the mountain. There he built the altar. He laid the wooden altar.
in order. And he took the knife and he bound the lad and laid him on that wood and was ready to sacrifice that beloved son. And the angel Lord called out from heaven and said, Abraham, do not lay a hand on the lad, for now I know you fear me, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham looked up and he saw the ram caught by his horn in the thicket. And he went and took the ram and sacrificed it to the Lord as a burnt sacrifice. And the angel of the Lord, we know, I believe, from Hebrews chapter 6, that this is the Son of God, before he was known as the Son of God, speaking from heaven, said, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me, by myself have I sworn. So we'll come back to this, and I may have to make this two lessons. By myself have I sworn that in blessing I will bless you. In multiplying, I will multiply you. And in your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Now you tell me that was an unconditional promise. You let the Lord tell you to sacrifice your son and tell me that's an unconditional promise. No, that promise from the early part of Abraham's call to the time when Abraham was an aged man, that call was conditioned, and that promise was conditioned on Abraham's obedience to the Lord. Now we'll come back at the end of the study of the Abrahamic promise to that statement that is made in Genesis chapter 22. By myself have I sworn, in blessing I will bless you, in multiplying I will multiply you, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Now there's a threefold promise. There is the nation promise, there is the land promise, and there is the seed promise. Please remember those three. There's the nation promise, the land promise, and the seed promise. Abraham died at around 175 years of age. One part of the promise had been fulfilled. He had received a son. But so far as any of those three great overall promises, none of it had been fulfilled at the time that he died. Isaac, his son after him, lived and died. The promise not fulfilled. Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, his grandson, lived and died. The promise had not been fulfilled. When Jacob was an aged man, he and his family, 75 in number, went down into Egypt to escape the great famine that was in the land of Canaan, because Joseph, the son, told him to come down and he would take care of him. And there the Israelites remained until Moses brought them out by the hand of God, mighty, uplifted, and outstretched to deliver the Israelites from Egyptian bondage, from Egyptian slavery. There transpired a time of 430 years from the time that God made the promise to Abraham until God had Moses lead them out of the land of Canaan. In fact, it is said in Exodus chapter 12, to the very day, to the very night, that they left Egypt from the time that the promise, 430 years transpired during this time. And they were led out by a mighty outstretched arm. They crossed the Jordan River they crossed the Red Sea as on dry land. And they came eventually to Mount Sinai at the southern tip of the Sinai Peninsula. And it took them 2 years to be formed into a nation there. And there they took a census of the soldiers, the men in Israel who were between 20 and 60 years of age, the Levites excluded, those who were of the priestly tribe and the tribe that would wait on the tabernacle excluded, those who could go out to war, men able to go to war between the ages of 20 and 60. And in Numbers chapter 1, verses 45 and 46, you see the total given. There were at that time 603,550 men in Israel between the ages of 20 and 60, other than the Levites, able to go out to war. So they have now gone from Abraham not even having an heir to being a mighty nation that has an army of 603,550. And so the next generation, as Moses now, as the generation has wandered to the wilderness and has been overthrown because of unbelief,
And the next generation, the book of Deuteronomy is the sometimes called the second giving of the law, but it's given to the second generation and is preparing them to enter the land of Canaan. Their fathers had died in the wilderness. And Moses, in Deuteronomy chapter 26, not long before Moses himself died at the age of 120, in Deuteronomy chapter 26, Moses tells them what they are to do when they come into the land, and they receive the first fruits of the land. And they are to say, this is Deuteronomy chapter 26, verse 5, before the Lord your God, my father was a Syrian ready to perish. That's talking about Jacob. He's ready to die in Canaan. And he went down and dwelt in Egypt. Few in number, 75 people went with the family of Jacob that went down. There were 75 people, went down to Egypt, dwelt there, and there he became, look carefully please, Deuteronomy 26 verse 5, there he became a nation, great, mighty, and populous. God sent them into Canaan, and it took 430 years. And they had to come out, or excuse me, we sent them into Egypt. They had to come out into the Sinai Peninsula at Mount Sinai and there be organized as a nation, given their laws, be organized so far as their army, and even given a priesthood, given a religion. And that religion, of course, was the Mosaic Covenant. But they were organized as a nation, but they became, while they were still in Egyptian bondage, a nation, great, mighty, and populous. Notice what's become of Abraham and his descendants in these 430 years. From a man who had no descendant because his wife was barren, to a man who had a nation descended from him. By the way, there were other nations descended from him other than Israel. But this is the nation of promise. God promised, I will make you a great nation. And while they were yet in Egypt, they became a nation, great, mighty, and populous. The first of the Abrahamic promises has been fulfilled. But the second promise is that I will give this land to your descendants. Now let's look at the land promise for a short time. What did the land promise include? Now, when Abram was in Shechem, in Genesis chapter 12, verse 7, when he first came into the land, the Lord just said, to your descendants, I will give this land. He did not tell him what the land included. But in Genesis chapter 15, Abram is having some doubts. And he says, Lord, well, who's going to be my heir? Why, my heir at this point is this Eliezer of Damascus, because he was born in my household. And you've promised me an heir, and I have no heir. I have no son. I have no children. And the Lord told Abram to go out and look at the stars in the sky above. And you can imagine in a desert country such as where he lived, to go out at night in a time when there were no clouds in the sky, no light pollution, and to look up into that dark night sky and to see there even the Milky Way and all the myriads of the stars as they were above. And the Lord said, if you can count the stars, you'll be able to number your offspring. And he said, Abraham believed the Lord. This is Genesis 15, verse 6. And he counted it to him for righteousness. That's repeated more than once in the New Testament. And thus then, the Lord turned the Abrahamic promise into a covenant. There's a strange scene that takes place there in Genesis chapter 15. But what that is the Lord making a covenant with Abraham in the way that covenants were made at that time. And in this covenant, the Lord specifies to Abraham what the land of promise included. He said, I will give this land to your descendants from the river of Egypt. Now, the river of Egypt is not the Nile. The river of Egypt is we'd call it a little brook, or actually in the West it'd be called a dry wash. I was born out in southwest Texas. There's places like that where if there's rain, there might be a torrent running through there, but most of the year it's just dry. And this is called a dry wash. Well, they call it a wadi. W-A-D-Y, I believe this spelled, maybe W-A-D-I in the east. And that's what the river V, it's in the middle of the Sinai Peninsula, and it's the southern extent of the land of Canaan, the promised land. To the great river, the river Euphrates, and that goes all the way up to Hormah, which is on the Euphrates River, which is the northern tip of the land of Mesopotamia. That's the promised land. It says, I will give this to your descendants. So here the land is specified. The land stretched all the way from the river of Egypt down here. You can't see when if I point that, and then this one doesn't work, but I'll just have to point up here. This is the river of Egypt down here, right here it is. All the way up, see, here's on the tip of the edge of Mesopotamia, all the way up on the Euphrates River. That's the promised land. That's what God promised to give to Abraham and his descendants. Moses died on the top of Mount Nebo and was buried in the unknown wilderness grave over on the opposite side of Jericho. And Joshua was given the leadership of the children of Israel, took them across the Jordan River at flood stage on dry land again, and came into the land of Canaan. And in the book of Joshua, we see Joshua leading the Israelites in conquering the Canaanites, in conquering the land of Canaan, until Joshua now comes to the end of his life. And turn over to Joshua chapter 21. Now this is very important for our understanding of God's plan of salvation. There are people who are called premillennialists. They believe that the Lord is going to come again to this earth and establish a 1,000-year material kingdom on this earth. These premillennialists tell us that the Abrahamic land promise has not yet been fulfilled, and that Israel has to be restored to the land of Canaan, and that they have to inherit this land that was promised to them in Genesis 15, verse 18. They have to have all the way from down here in the Sinai Peninsula, all the way up to the Euphrates River, all the way over to Mediterranean Sea, and all the way over to the desert. In this, they have to have all of that land, because it has not yet been fulfilled. I debated a Baptist preacher in Central Arkansas all back about 30 years ago, and he affirmed that God will restore national Israel to the land of Canaan. Now, this is his concept, that the Abrahamic land promise has not yet been fulfilled. He was a premillennialist. He did not understand, or at least he didn't believe, Joshua chapter 21, verses 43 through 45. I don't see how a passage could be plainer than Joshua chapter 21, verses 43 through 45. And by the way, if we had the time, we could multiply. There's other passages that affirm it, but none any more plainly than Joshua 21, 43 through 45. This is the end of the life of Joshua. He died at the age of 110. After he led the Israelites in the conquest of the land. Read with me, please, Joshua 21, 43 through 45. So the Lord gave to Israel all the land of which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession and dwelt in it. Now, if we just stop reading right there, would you say that the Abrahamic land promise had been fulfilled? God gave them all the land he promised to their fathers. That's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They took possession of it. They dwelt in it. But it gets stronger. Just read on with me. The Lord gave them rest all around, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers. According to how much he had sworn to their fathers? According to all that he had sworn to their fathers. And not a man of all their enemies stood before them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. Not a word. I love the old King James. There failed not aught. There didn't fail so much as zero. Not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord has spoken to the house of Israel. All. Can you understand that word all? All came to pass. Now how much of the Abrahamic land promise has yet to be fulfilled? Joshua said it's all been fulfilled. Not a word failed. God gave all the land to them that he had promised to give them. Now that didn't leave any out. Now, our premillennial friends will argue around about, well, you know, what about the Canaanites and all? God said he fulfilled all of it. They took possession, dwelt in, and none of their enemies stood before them. But if that's not good enough, let's go to Solomon. David conquered and took back all of these lands that have been lost in the intervening 400 years of the judges. When David became king, He conquered all those lands around him. And when his son Solomon took the throne, look please at 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 21. And now, by the way, we've come down close to 900 years after the time when God made the promise to Abraham. There's been a lot of time. In fact, we've come down further than we've come down about 1,000 years from the time when God had made the promise to Abraham and the land promise. And notice what is said concerning the rule of Solomon in 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 21. So Solomon reigned over all kingdoms from the river. Now, when you see the word the river in the Old Testament, that's the Euphrates. That's the river. Preeminently so. That was to them the big river, the great river. From the river, Solomon ruled all the way up to the Euphrates River. From the river, as far as to the land of the Philistines, as far as the border of Egypt, all the way down to Egypt. And all those kingdoms paid tribute to him and served him all the days of his life. Solomon ruled over all the land that God had promised Abraham in Genesis chapter 15, verse 18. David reconquered it. Solomon reigned over it. So there's two times in the history of Israel that God has given them all the land that he swore to. And by the way, they lost that land because of their failure to obey him. But they possessed it. God twice gave them all the land that he had promised to give to Abraham. Now, I'm going to stop here because we have so much more that I want to say concerning the third part of the promise. That this is a breaking point, and we'll take this as a breaking point. But what we've seen, so go ahead and open your song books to number 280, please. Number 280. What we've now seen is that the Lord has given to Abram, way back about 2,000 years before the birth of Jesus Christ, three great promises. And you can see, now I'm actually simplifying this greatly. We can go into more detail just concerning the promises and see in more detail how this outlines Old Testament history. But what we've seen is in this promise an outline of the development of God's plan for the salvation of mankind just in the Old Testament, but now just concerning Israel. And it's, at this point, one would be hard-pressed to say, well, to tell us how this has to do with our salvation. But I believe you can easily see how it's outlining Old Testament history for us. So we see the development of God's plan in the Old Testament. The nation promise. While in Egypt, Israel became a nation great, mighty, and populous. The land promise. At the end of Joshua's leadership, Israel inherited all the land which God had promised to their fathers. There did not fail one word of any good things the Lord spoke to the house of Israel. All came to pass. Now here is a great concept. Besides giving you a means by which you can see an overview of the development of Old Testament history and of the plan of salvation, I want you to stop and think about, when God makes a promise, does he keep his promise? This is crucial. This is as important a concept as we will ever understand. When God makes a promise, does he keep his promise? Abraham lived his lifetime. He lived to be 175 years old. And he never received one square inch of land in the land. He had to buy a plot on which to bury his wife in the cave of Machpelah. Had to buy it from a Hittite. He didn't have one bit of land. He was not really not a great nation. He was hard-pressed to have a descendant. And he went to his grave, and not one part of that threefold promise had been fulfilled. And yet, over time, 430 years, the nation promise was fulfilled. About 500 years, the land promise was fulfilled. But still, the great promise that we're looking for, the great promise that affects us directly, in your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. It had never yet been fulfilled. And we're going to see millennia go by before that promise is fulfilled. But when we see it fulfilled, we'll see what the Old Testament has to do with the New Testament, how the two are connected, and we will see how we are saved. Well, that's what we're going to do next Sunday evening, so we'll come back for that. There may be somebody in the audience this evening who needs to make your life right with the Lord. If you're among that number, we invite you to come as we stand together and sing the song of invitation.